Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Every year, the tiny Mississippi Delta town of Greenville celebrates the region's famous hot tamale with a weekend-long festival. Greenville native Julia Reed rounds up a coterie of famous literary folks and celebrity chefs with the intent of causing a stir in the sleepy little southern town. And boy, what a stir it is! On this week's Louisiana Eats, we're going to the festival with Miss Julia, and you won't believe who all we find there. Famed New York writer Calvin Trillin, legendary Southern teller of tales Roy Blunt Jr., and some of my favorite chef friends like Allison Bynes Rushing, her husband Slade, and Steven Strajewski join in the fun, all in the name of the Delta Hot Tamale. I hope you're hungry, because there are over 40 different hot tamales to sample along the way. So grab the fire extinguisher and get ready for a spicy time on this week's Louisiana Eats. Julia Reed's writing career transported her from her childhood home in the Mississippi Delta onto the pages of Newsweek, The Wall Street Journal, Vogue magazine, and Garden and Gun. But Julia heeded the call to come home to Greenville when plans were formulating for the first annual Delta Hot Tamale Festival. The founding mothers of the festival, better known as the Hot Tamamas, crowned Julia their pizzazz consultant. Of course, Miss Julia rose to the challenge and enlisted acclaimed writers and chefs from the Deep South and beyond. When we sat down with Julia, she shared memories of the very first Hot Tamale Festival and the significance of the hot tamale in the Mississippi Delta.
I mean, literally the first solid food I ever ate in my life was a hot tamale. I mean, there is a picture of my mother pregnant with me on the steps of Doe's. So I was eating hot tamales in utero. I'm Julia Reed, and I'm from Greenville, Mississippi, my hometown, which I love and adore and go back to all the time. And when it comes to the Delta Hot Tamale Festival, according to my good friend Calvin Trillin, who wrote a brilliant piece about it in The New Yorker, I am the pizzazz consultant of the festival, a title I'll happily take.
Tell me about how this festival got started, when and why and how.
Well, we had part of what the festival has as its intent is to improve downtown, which in Greenville, like a lot of small towns, you know, up and down. And Greenville's a fairly big city. It's, you know, when I was growing up, it was 50,000 people. Now it's about 40,000. And our downtown in the 70s, when the malls came and all that stuff, started the typical urban decay. And so one of the intentions of the festival, which is held downtown, was to try to revitalize that. And so all the proceeds and stuff go to causes that aid downtown. So hot tamales have been, as you know, and you learned more than you probably wanted to know that weekend, hot tamales have been a staple of Mississippi Delta for, you know, more than a century.
Why is the hot tamale so important in the Mississippi
Delta?
Well,
nobody can quite pinpoint the origin of a hot tamale, and it's called a hot tamale. It's not necessarily super spicy, but that's just the name of it, as opposed to the classic tamale of Central America and Mexico. You know, the best we can figure is like when a lone Mexican obviously wandered through the Delta and dropped his recipe on the ground for tamale, and it was taken and improved upon, like so many other things in our culture, taken over by the African-American population and made into some whole different animal.
Because this was a food that was sent out into the fields at
yes,
lunchtime,
because you
right?
can roll it into a shuck. It's like a Natchitoches meat pie, which is very specific to Natchitoches. This is very specific to the Delta, although it's traveled like many, many African-American Deltons did, it's traveled to New Orleans. It's made it that you can find hot tamale stands in Chicago with, you know, with the Great Migration. And Shelby Foote came up with what the great Civil War historian, who's also from Greenville, came up with what I think might be the best explanation, that around the turn of the century, in the early 1900s, there was a big boll weevil problem in Texas. And so that that sent migrant workers, like Mexican migrant workers, further up into the South than they would have ordinarily gone. Texas was a big cotton farming state in those days. So a lot, you know, a few of them probably made it as high as the Mississippi Delta, which is fairly north. I mean, it's in the northern part of the state. And a few of them probably made it up there. And then when work was back when in the land that they love more, like Texas, they left, but with not without leaving their recipe. And it's got a little tiny bit of a Southern Italian influence, too. I mean, Doe's Eat Place, which is owned, started by a Sicilian immigrant named Dominic Signor, he was a second generation, has probably the most famous tamales in the Delta. But now there's a hot tamale trail through the Delta that the Southern Foodways Alliance has mapped out. I mean, it's a thing.
It's well established.
Yes. There are home cooks in Greenville that it used to have this annual competition every year who made the best hot tamales. I mean, you know, it spans all cultures. White people make hot tamales. Black people make hot tamales. Everybody in between makes hot tamales. So there's a group of folks one day said, you know, why don't we put on a festival? And it's kind of, you know, there were a few key people were involved. There were three women who started calling themselves the Tamamas that kind of spearheaded its development. So from there, the mayor, he made sure that Greenville was declared the hot tamale capital of the world, which you can register and trademark and all that stuff, and really was, you know, the driving force to getting this festival off the ground. So
how do you become the pizzazz, Julian?
Well, what happened was, I, you know, the ladies, you know, some of the ladies and the volunteers that were working on the very first festival asked me if I could maybe get them some PR or whatever, and I happened to be home the weekend of the festival, and my friend Roy Blunt Jr., the great writer, was with me, and the Tamale Festival was going on. So Roy and I volunteered our services as like judges for this thing, which is super hard. I had no idea. I'd never do it again. we were the judges, and we were wandering around. But, I mean, we got there early in the morning to get our marching orders. And, you know, by 10 a.m., I'm looking, and there are thousands of people downtown. This is just the first year. And here we are downtown, which is usually empty. There are 10,000 people there before the day was over. And I was just gobsmacked. So I just got all of my writer and chef friends and lured them with the promise of fun and not much else down to Greenville for the weekend. And so now it's entrenched. We call it the Garden and Gun was the sponsor the first year, and they came up with the name, the Literary Culinary Mashup, because we have writers and chefs, and now we have artists and everything. So
it's so hard to get to the Delta, to think that you summon
in
these luminaries from all over the country.
It's interesting. All right, so Roy Blunt Jr., poor thing, is now a lifer. So he comes every year. Calvin Trillin, you know, I conned him into coming to writing about us, and now he comes back as a panelist. And then the chefs, of course, we got Don Link and Steven Strzejewski and Ryan Pruitt from New Orleans. And we have
Slade Rushing
there. Came last year and competed.
Wife, Allison
and his
Vine.
Wife, Allison Vines, Rushing.
They were both famous in her own right.
They were great on the panels. And we get the chefs to come the night before and cook up this fabulous dinner for everybody. So what I conceived of and is now just entrenched as the Literary Culinary Mashup is all the writers and artists and photographers and people that have books come and sign their books at this kickoff dinner, which is cooked by all these heavyweight James Beard Award-winning chefs.
And very elegant, under tents.
Under
with
tents,
the dance
and, yeah.
Floor.
I mean, one year we had it at a cotton gin. One year we had it at the Baby Doll House, which is an antebellum house in Detroit. And the chefs love cooking there, so they're like, you know, we're not leaving here. This is where we're going to do it every year. And then I make the chefs compete in a celebrity tamale cook-off, you know, which is separate from the real tamale contest. We make them get on stage. But they work hard at it, and they are competitive. The first year when Donald Link did not win, he was like, wait a minute, you didn't tell me we could have sauces on these tamales. I'm like, I'm not the tamale police. You can do anything you want.
It was fantastic. So the day of the Tamale Festival actually comes. And I would like you to describe the parade.
It's very charming. I mean, we are not, you know, this is not like a, you know, homecoming parade or a Mardi Gras parade or any other kind of parade. It's a Hot Tamale Festival parade, for God's sake. So, well, every year we have a king and queen of the festival, and that's usually somebody that's done a lot. Both of those people have been done a lot for the community. Then we have, like, truckloads of children, and somebody's playing the guitar in the back, and the children are singing along to Robert Johnson's hit, Hot Tamales and You're Red Hot, which is one of those songs you cannot get out of your head for years after hearing it.
And there's a little
And it lasts all day.
There's a beauty contest.
That's right.
Julia.
Well, Miss Hot Tamale. One of my favorite things about Miss Hot Tamale is the first year made her dress entirely out of shucks. And so that became a thing. So every year the contestants have dresses made out of shucks. The woman that won, the young woman who won last year or year before, even had like, it was like a Scarlett O'Hara kind of ball gown. It even had a bustle in it. All shucks. The eating contest is always a huge hit.
Of course. Of course.
A Louisiana man wins. Detrick Bolden wins every year except for one. He's won. He eats like 50 hot tamales in 5 minutes. It's insane.
It's an amazing thing to see. What, if you had to pick one thing, what's your favorite part?
Oh, gosh. I love how the locals have gotten into it. I mean, like, there's a group of young professionals that just do it for fun, and they call themselves the Lost Cat Tamale Company.
Oh, I love them.
Because for years there was like a rumor that, you know, don't eat those tamales, they put cats in them. And and their T-shirts usually say, Here, Kitty, Kitty, on the back. And one of the kids, when Trillin was, you know, writing the piece for the New Yorker, he's asking him, so is it true about the rumors that cats were in tamales at one point? And the guy with the straight face just looked at him and said, well, you know, you need a binder. We don't put cats in tamales, but I'm glad somebody has a sense of humor about it. So it's just a great way to wind down and lay around and look at the beauty that's the Delta and have a really good time.
Julia Reed, writer and pizzazz consultant for the Delta Hot Tamale Festival. I experienced Julia Reed's pizzazz firsthand when I arrived at the festival's kickoff event, a gala held at Belmont Plantation, an antebellum beauty that dates back to 1857. That night, the brick mansion glowed with a warm, welcoming light as cocktails were served on the veranda, followed by a sumptuous dinner served under magnificent oak trees and magnolias, alluringly lit with giant paper lanterns. A dream team of chefs, including Cole Ellis of Delta Meat Market and New Orleans culinary stars Slade Rushing and Steven Strajewski, created a menu as magical as the setting. After dinner, a dance floor beckoned as the party went late into the night. But by 10 o'clock the next morning, we caught up with Julia again in an old high school auditorium, commandeered for a literary culinary mashup panel discussion. Of course, there were mimosas and bacon-garnished Bloody Marys for the taking, as some of my favorite chefs and writers discussed stories about and around the Southern table. Julia Reed led the conversation, explaining how difficult it is to write on the subject of food.
Writing about food is pretty boring if you're just actually writing about food. I remember one time they gave me an assignment to write about iceberg lettuce, and seriously, after you say it's kind of crunchy and light green, there's not a whole lot to say about iceberg lettuce. And so I ended up writing about iceberg lettuce salads that I have known, primarily at Doe's and Lillo's Dine and Dance here in Greenville and Leland. You have to digress, because it's the only way to go if you write about food. But these guys all make it interesting, whether at the stove or on the bay. So Roy, why don't you tell us about Rotel?
Roy Blunt Jr. joined in with an observation on the local dialect.
Someday I'm going to do a philosophical, write a whole dissertation about why Mississippi hot tamales, you pronounce it hot tamale. don't say hot tamale, you say hot tamale. Everybody says hot tamale. And I can't, you know, you say hot chocolate, you don't say hot chocolate. And I think it's good to pay attention to what syllables we stress in food. For instance, somebody served me a BLT in a restaurant, in a very healthy restaurant the other day, and it was a little bit of bacon and a whole lot of tomato lettuce and just a little bit of tomato. And I said, this is not a BLT, this is a BLT. So like with SOS, if you sit with you stress the O, it's say our ship. You know, there might be other ships. Well, there's that other kind of SOS too, which is heat. But at any rate, that's something that we can get into next year, maybe.
Reporter Calvin Trillin of The New Yorker explained what he ate growing up and the bizarre examples of Delta and Louisiana food culture that pique his interest.
Very envious of Ryan, who had a mother who knew how to cook three things. I was out of college before I realized that my mother, for 20 or 30 years, had served her family nothing but leftovers. By that time, I started wondering, leftover from what? Team of anthropologists in there looking for the original meal. Unsuccessfully. Often at dinner, being maybe 12, 15 things on the table, then she'd jump up, oh, I forgot the Jell-O mold. One of the things I've always admired about the Southern chefs is that they have total contempt for other Southern chefs. I once did a piece on T.D.'s restaurant, and he would say, you taste my etouffee, you'll throw rocks at other people's etouffee. I did a piece on turducken once.
Well, you have to tell them what a turducken is.
They know what a turducken is. They're going to pretend they don't know what a turducken is. But turducken is a... get the order wrong all the time. It's a duck stuffed chicken with there are a lot of things stuffed into it. That's all you need to know about it. But they're deboned first, so it makes for easy carving. It's like carving a meatloaf. Most people can do it. And I interviewed a man I know there who was the praiser of Lafayette Parish in Louisiana. He said, you taste my turducken, you go home and slap your mama. The other thing I admire about Southern chefs is that cooks is that they're adventurous. The first time I guess I was here for the festival was my first experience with Kool-Aid pickles. Interesting cultural phenomenon. What I like to imagine is how a Kool-Aid pickle came about. And as I see it, there are two guys standing in the kitchen, and one of them says, I think I'll take this half-gallon jar of kosher dill, pour out the juice, fill it up with Kool-Aid, let it sit for 6 or 7 days. The other guy says, that ought to do it.
James Beard Rising Star Award winner and West Monroe, Louisiana native, Chef Allison Vines Rushing shared stories of her first job in the culinary world.
Well, I've always been a worker, kind of. And I was ready to work. I was ready for a job. So the day I turned 16, I wanted a job that day. I wanted to make my own money. I wanted to make my own decisions. You know, I was ready to go. And yeah, I grew up on Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, you know, Conway Twitty, Merle Haggard, all that good stuff. But I especially love the Kenny and Dolly duets. Those were really my favorites. I also loved Alabama. That was a big one. You know, I knew all the Alabama songs. And so we had moved to Florida, which was quite different than, you know, where I grew up. And I lived there, I guess, a couple years at this point. And I saw that there was a Kenny Rogers Roasters opening up. And it was the very first one in Coral Springs, Florida. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Kenny Rogers Roasters. It was wood-roasted chicken. And the slogan was, and this is so good, it's the wood that makes it good. And I saw that was about to open, and I was like, oh my God, and right before my birthday, you know? And I was like, Mom, take me down to Kenny Rogers Roasters today. I'm gonna get a job. And I mean, it was meant to be, you know? I knew, I mean, I celebrate his entire collection. So she took me down there, and of course, I, you know, really impressed them with my knowledge of Kenny Rogers.
When we come back from a short break, we'll head to historic downtown Greenville for the Delta Hot Tamale Festival. Stay tuned.
You do something to me that I can't explain. Hold me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat of my heart, we got something going on.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Ralph Brennan's Redfish Grill, from dock to pot, offering 9 varieties of fresh Gulf fish daily. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter.
Now, as the judge, he sure is fine. He makes hot tamales all the time.
Saturday morning, the Delta Hot Tamale Festival kicked off with a classic small-town parade. A fire truck led the way, followed by an antique car that carried the festival's queen and king, Betty Jo Brent Boyd and her brother, Howard Brent.
All right.
The royalty ascended the stage and were introduced to the crowd just before the street celebration commenced.
Any comments on being selected this year as the queen?
I love that we're doing this. I think it's one of the best things that's happened to Greenville.
It absolutely is. Thank you. And this year's king, Mr. Howard Brent, the 2016 king. The king of the river, actually, too. So how's it feel to be the king of the hot tamales, too?
Man, I don't know, but I'm thrilled to death there. We're just having a good time to be king for a day. Be treated like a peasant tomorrow, but that's all right.
Ain't that the truth? With that, I'm going to go on to the official blessing of the hot tamale with Mr. Hank Burdine.
What I want us to do is bow our heads and thank the Lord for this absolutely glorious day right here in the Delta. I want you to look around today as we come through this wonderful hot tamale festival. Look at all our brothers and sisters from all parts of the world, from all colors and all creeds. We gathered here today honoring the lowly hot tamale that has brought so many of us together, and it means so much to us all here in the Delta and all over the United States. So thank you, Lord, for what you've done for us, what you continue to do for us, and in Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
As the hot tamale competition approached and tamale makers from across the Delta put the finishing touches on their booths, I set out to discover just what it takes to make an award-winning tamale. Oh my, did I find some characters along the way.
When you die, and I die and you go to heaven, if you look me up, I'd be the one making the hot tamale in heaven.
Then what is your name, sir?
My name is Willie Harmon.
I know that goes without saying about your tamales, because that's all anybody could talk about was hot tamale heaven.
That's right. If you really want to know the truth, when it comes to hot tamale, I'm God. You hear me?
Amen. That's we're in heaven.
That's right.
My name is Valley Scott Mitchell. The reason they're so good, we put a lot of tender love and care in each tamale we make.
It's all about the love.
Yes.
My name is Malcolm Dye, and my hot tamales are sold as Mr. Hot Tamales.
And where are your tamales originating from?
Out of Cleveland, Mississippi.
I run Katie's Kitchen. I do beef, chicken, venison, seafood, Mexican, and eggplant tamales. I'm not in it to win or to say that I have the best hot tamale. My customers have to tell me that, but I just love to cook.
Hi, it's Jean Weathers, and it's Mama's Hot Tamales.
Well, it's a lot of work making tamales, isn't it?
I have a little machine. It's called the Tamale King. But anyway, and I put my meat in there, and it squirts them out so that they'll all come out the same size. And then we hand roll them in the mazam.
We use a beef brisket, and it is a homemade, handmade, and it's made with lots of love.
No machine at all. Handmade, all handmade.
My name is Cynthia McGaugh.
And I'm Rick McGaugh.
My name is Jewel McCain, and I own Solly's Hot Tamales in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Here is the original Show No Hot Tamale.
And where are you all out at?
Greenville, Mississippi.
Oh, so you're right here local?
Right here locally.
How long have you been making tamales?
Since 1982.
We've been making hot tamales 40 years. Right over there, whenever used to be a store there called Steinmont, and we start off selling hot tamales in a little wooden cart, a little bit bigger than that, with some bicycle tires on it, and now we is USDA approved.
We officially started making hot tamales to sell in the 60s. I've been making tamales since about 1990.
So it's a great family tradition.
Well, actually, I started it, I don't know what my kids are going to do. It might die when I do. I don't know. I hope not. But
surely you're sharing the recipe with them.
I will when I get a little older. I'm only 61 now. I got 20 more years to do this at least. So.
34 years.
34 years. Is it your recipe or is it a family recipe?
No, it's Mr. Solly's recipe. He taught me in 1982, and I've been doing it ever since.
So who was Mr. Solly?
The owner and founder of Solly's Hot Tamales. He started in Vicksburg in 1939.
many tamales do you make in preparation for the festival?
Anywhere from 250 to 500.
My goodness.
No, it just depends on what time, if I have enough time to do it.
Do you sell out?
I do.
About 900 dozen.
900 dozen?
Yeah.
But everybody I talk to keeps telling me about your tamales, so I know you're doing something
good. I'm the man.
How many tamales did you make in preparation for today?
I lost count. All I gotta say is I'm tired of looking at tamales for a while.
The best tamale makers in the hot tamale capital of the world, Greenville, Mississippi. The Hot Tamama, who announced the cook-off winners, said there were over 40 varieties of tamales entered in the competition. Hot Tamale Heaven got first place in the meat category.
Well, congratulations.
If I had to do this all over again, I would make hot tamale. That's how much I love it.
For the celebrity chef competition, Regina Charbonneau of King's Tavern in Natchez was declared the winner after several failed attempts in years past.
Regina, congratulations. You finally won. How long have you been after this prize?
This was the third time. The third time's the charm. I was starting to feel like the Susan Lucci of the Tamale Festival. The first year I did smoked catfish tamales with the salsa verde. And last year I did my brisket tamales, but I got beat by Herb Saint, Rebecca, and it was a good, fair win. But I felt like, you know, these are really good. I'm going to do it again. And I just upped my presentation a little bit with the beet curls and in the little buckets, and it worked. So I'm so thrilled.
Also a winner that day was Bill Jones of Koshan.
Billy, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I am very happy to be the tamale king of the Delta. I am a longtime eater, first time maker of tamales, so I just basically made it as simple as I could and made every ingredient taste as best as I could, and then I think it just falls into place after that. It was smoky braised short rib, a nice fatty pork lard masa harina, so you have a corn flavor, and then a sweet roasted bitter Guajillo chili sauce that had some tomatoes and roasted garlic in it. And I think all those flavors really work well together.
Great job. Congratulations. We'll see you at home at Koshan.
Thank you very much.
Next, contestants in the hot tamale eating competition attempted to consume as many hot tamales as they could in just 5 minutes. Last year's champ, Tony Johnson, was just 6 tamales short of a victory.
Actually, I ate 24, but they only gave me credit for 22. Because what happened was the guy was sitting next to me, the lady pulled my bag. And she said, you're supposed to put the wrapping in the bag. I just put it in the boy's bag next door. So, it's no big deal.
Are you coming back to compete next year, you think?
No, I think I'm done.
You're done with your competition.
If you don't show up, I... Let him have his fun. Let him have fun. He doing it. He doing good.
The he Tony was referring to was this year's reigning champion, Dectric Bolden.
My name is Dectric Bolden. I'm glad to be a winner again. I've been a winner 4 out of 5 times since they had the hot tamale contest here in Greenville, Mississippi.
So how many tamales did you eat?
I ate 27.
27 in 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
How do you prepare for the contest?
Well, I just eat a lot on a regular basis.
Will you be back next year?
I'll be back next year. I want 30. Once I get 30, I'll sit down.
What is the difference between masa harina and cornmeal? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blended beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What is the difference between masa harina and cornmeal? Masa harina is a very soft corn flour made from finely ground hominy or dried white corn kernels that have been soaked in a diluted solution of calcium hydroxide. The word masa literally translates as dough. When combined with baking powder, salt, lard, and a little broth, masa makes the soft, spongy dough used to make tamales. On the other hand, cornmeal is usually made from yellow corn and has a much coarser texture, making it just the thing to give fried seafood that crunchy goodness. On the other hand, cornmeal is usually made from yellow corn and has a much coarser texture, making it just the thing to give fried seafood that crunchy goodness. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
My name is Ann Martin, and the name of my book is Delta Hot Tamales: History, Stories, and Recipes.
After spending an afternoon sampling the many varieties of tamales at the Delta Hot Tamale Festival, I met one of the festival's founders, a hot tamama named Ann Martin, whose book offers a historical record and a thorough look at the distinctive culinary treat. With Anne's vast knowledge on the subject, she was just the person to ask why the hot tamale is the ultimate food of the Delta.
That's a good question. And even though I wrote a book about it, I'm not sure we answered it completely. Other than it's a food that we know that came in here through the Mexican migrant worker, and it was a portable food that went to the field. And then the African-American worker took it and made it better, made it what we have today, using ingredients that were a staple in the kitchen, mainly pork and cornmeal. And they made that tamale spicier and made it better and made it easier probably to make, but really added the flavor. The Mexican tamale traditionally doesn't have a lot of flavor to it. The Delta hot tamale, we don't call it a hot tamale for nothing. It's got a little more spice to it. It doesn't mean they're so spicy they're going to burn your tongue. There's some are like that, but most of them just have a nice flavor to it. They've got a nice aftertaste. So it's become such an institution down here, and I think part of it is because the folks that make it work so hard to perfect that recipe, they don't want to share it. That's why you can't just walk in any restaurant and say, hey, I want a hot tamale. It's not like how to sear a steak. It's a two-day process. It's a difficult thing to make when you get in the kitchen because it is such a long process, but the seasoning is so unique. And so that recipe is secretive, but they don't want to share it. And many of those recipes end up dying with the person that developed it, unless there's some family member that wants to take it on.
How long have you been researching the tamale?
Probably since I was about 5 years old. I started eating tamales literally when I was about five. My dad brought them home when I was a kid, and we learned to eat them right off the bat. But really got into it about 2012 when we started the Hot Tamale Festival. I'm one of the founders of the festival. So we began to eat the tamales here from the folks at the festival. And then when I started working on the book, it became even more intense. It's like, I need to go back and eat those again. It was an excuse to eat more tamales. But if you take the traditional tamale, the chief variation is the spices. They may use the same spices, it's the amount. Some you'll have more of a garlic flavor. Some you can taste more of that red pepper. and some more black pepper. It's the spices and how much they choose to use.
How many days out of the year do you estimate you eat tamales?
Last year, let's see, there's 365 days in a year. I probably ate tamales, oh, I'll say 300. There was a lot. There were two or three days that I had tamales for breakfast, lunch, and dinner because I was out on the road researching, and I'd bring some home because I said, okay, I've had enough. I need to let the palate take a rest. So I'd get up the next morning and go again, and here I would go and eat them again.
What are people going to learn by reading your book?
I think they're going to learn more about the history of the tamales and where they came from. And I think they're going to learn more about the people that actually make them. And these folks are, they're just folks in their kitchen that wanted to take a tradition that was passed down from their parents, or it was a way for them to make a little extra money. And every tamale's touched my hand. There's no way to roll them without touching them. And another thing that I offered in the book was a way to use the tamale as an ingredient in other recipes. One of my favorites is a hot tamale fried pie. The same sort of mixture with whole kernel corn and olives, green onions, you can use black beans, and cut out a pie crust about the size of a martini glass and put it in the middle, fold it over, crimp the edges, drop it in some hot oil, and fry it on one side for about 2 minutes, flip it over, serve it with guacamole.
Is this your first book?
My very first one. It won't be the last, but it is the first one.
Well, congratulations. You must be so tickled.
I'm very excited. I think the time was right for this. There's nothing else out there like this. And hot tamales are kind of like Cajun food was back in the mid-80s. Suddenly it exploded, and everybody across the country wants to eat Cajun food. Now everybody wants to know about hot tamales, so we're going to help them learn.
Ann Martin, author of Delta Hot Tamales, History, Stories, and Recipes.
Hot tamales and barbecue, way up on Texas Avenue. Hot tamales and barbecue, way up on Texas Avenue. Hot tamales and barbecue, that's the proper thing for you.
Leave it to Ann Martin to transform the hot tamale into a plethora of other dishes. Now, making a hot tamale from scratch is quite a project, maybe something best left to the pros. But once you've got your hands on some, the fun really begins. Mash up some tamales with corn kernels, tomatoes, and cheese, and then use that mixture to stuff some bell peppers. Yum! To make a tamale dip, layer mashed up tamales with onions, chili, and cheese in a casserole dish. Then bake until bubbly and serve with Fritos, of course. Or cut a tamale in thirds and wrap each piece in bacon and broil till crispy. Bacon-wrapped tamales? How could that be bad? Think you've heard everything now? How about a tamale dog? And butters and toasts a hot dog bun, then adds a warm tamale topped with chili, cheese, and coleslaw. No matter how you cook it, one thing is certain, Delta hot tamales make for some good Louisiana eats. When it comes to learning any aspect of Southern food, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better authority than John T. Edge. He's currently director of the Southern Foodways Alliance, a nonprofit organization based in Oxford, Mississippi, whose mission is to document, explore, and promote Southern food culture. On a recent visit to the Louisiana Eat studio, I asked John T. to share his point of view on tamales and the South.
Well, I can speak to it more specifically to Mississippi and the Mississippi Delta. When I first moved to Mississippi about 22 years ago, when you're a grad student in Oxford, you instinctively drive west. You drive to the Delta. It's a fascinating place, richly multicultural, the root of so many musical expressions. And I remember seeing signs by the roadside for alligator and buffalo and tamales.
Okay.
Okay. And the alligator was alligator gar. The buffalo was buffalo carp. And people like fry buffalo carp sandwiches. Like you get a, it's beautiful fish. It's not fish you normally see on diner menus, catfish cafes, that places. The other thing I saw was tamales. Hot signs that said hot tamales. And that made no sense to me. At that point, I didn't know much about the history of the Mississippi Delta. And when in grad school, I began to dig into why. How did it come to be that the favored snack food of the Mississippi Delta is hot tamales? You know, Shelby Foote spoke of eating hot tamales as a boy and eating hot tamales and loving hot tamales before he ever saw a hush puppy, never ate a hush puppy. Shelby Foote, who grew up in Greenville, Mississippi. But I was fascinated and began to dig in and figured out that in the early years of the 20th century, Mexican-American laborers were brought up into the Delta to pick cotton. So after the labor systems change, after the end of enslavement, after labor shortages occur during bumper cotton harvest years, the planters of the Delta need more labor. They need more people to pull in the crop. And they begin pulling up Mexican-American laborers. If you look at like plantation commissary digest, you'll see masa as an ingredient being brought in and shucks being brought in. We're making tamales for the farm laborers. And in those cotton fields, my best guess, and I don't have direct record of this, but that you see an exchange of Mexican-American labor and African-American labor and eventually working-class white labor. They're sharing foods. They're gathering at an early lunch in the fields. And the ingredients in tamales are pretty familiar if you're a working-class white Southerner or black Southerner. Pork and corn, we know. We all know.
John T., talk about eating tamales. How do you like to eat your tamales?
I like to eat my tamales with a beer. Tamales are great drinking ballast. I like to eat my tamales cracked in half, mounted on a saltine, and doused with Tabasco. That, to me, is the proper way. You need to take it out of the shuck first, but yeah, yeah.
You're a man who knows your tamales.
I've watched people try to eat the damn things with the shuck on.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because you've introduced some, shall we, dare we say, Yankees to tamales.
Well, these aren't even, I mean, it's not even a question of the North-South thing. It's just like, you know, they didn't grow up with tamales. And think somehow that this thing before them couldn't even be a tamale because we're in the Mississippi Delta. How could this be a tamale? You know, and that's changing now as migration patterns and labor patterns change in the Mississippi Delta. But, you know, that curiosity I first had when I traveled to the Mississippi Delta, when I moved to Mississippi 20 plus years ago, it still shows in anyone who's introduced to this food. It's like, you know, I once drove Calvin Trillin and Bud Trillin around Mississippi Delta to eat tamales because he was curious himself. One of the, you know, the writers I admire most in this game. You know, and it was enough to get me a day with Bud Trillin that tamales were that curious.
John T. Edge, director of the Southern Foodways Alliance.
Hot tamales and cha-cha.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and take us with you wherever you go. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and from Dickie Brennan's Bourbon House, from oysters to redfish, serving fresh Gulf seafood on Bourbon Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Don't forget to find our recipes and see what we're up to at poppytooker.com. You can check us out on Instagram and Facebook as well. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.